Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Transperfect Lifestyle Talks. I'm Mark Wade, your host. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Edwin Cullen. Edwin is principal consultant at Steam Flow Instrument Creation. I love that, by the way, Edwin, thanks for coming on. I love the strapline from vision to execution. I love it. I hadn't seen that before. Edwin, thanks for coming on. Welcome.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me in the podcast.
Now, Edwin, full disclosure, we know each other. We've come across the other profession before. So I'm familiar with some of your research. And today we're going to talk about e-consent. To me, anyway, e-consent is the on-ramp for e-clinical, right? It is the easiest part to get on. But you published on this. And I think to set the stage, maybe we could talk about your research and then we'll go into the challenges of e-consent and what's often forgotten. So you published something in the Journal of Medical Internet Research, if I'm saying that correctly. Can you talk a bit about that, please?
Yes, of course. And let me start by saying why we did the research, because we considered the research to be important to gather the data that proves and provides us the evidence that e-consent is better perceived than the traditional paper documents that are out there for quite a long time and is still being used significantly within clinical trials. So that was the first reason why we started to do this research. And the good thing about the paper that we wrote is that it confirmed the outcome, or it confirmed our thoughts around that electronic sending and sharing the information on an electronic device with accommodated animated content is better perceived. And that supported us in continuing to push for utilizing e-consent within clinical trials.
I definitely want to talk about the animation thing, but if we pull this back, slightly, because we've had people on the podcast before that have mentioned e-consent. So let's just pull this back slightly. The challenge that I hear from Site and the challenge I hear from some of the or the e-clinical companies that do e-consent is that there's all these different technologies and sites are overwhelmed with all these different technologies. So regardless of the plain language that we need to use, it's the technology for technologies that we have to manage. Did you touch on the research?
Not specifically, but this is a known thing within the industry, and this is the feedback that we've received and still receive many times. And I'm afraid that it will never disappear eventually, that we always will need to work with many different systems, that we can do a better job in aligning those systems with the site processes and having them interact with each other. I can fully agree with that. We as an industry can do a little bit better. What's really important about eventually, in my mind, about the technology itself is that it supports the consenting process that happens on site. And the challenge here is that on global country level and even on individual site level, these processes differ. And the challenge for us as the industry is to find a proper way to accommodate and enable sites to continue with the consenting process, and technology should only enable that.
So this is the challenge. I've heard this, by the way, from so many e-clinical companies, ECOA companies. Their different technologies often is their secret sauce. They don't want to have a standardized application. I get it, but wouldn't it help the industry? Wouldn't it help the sites especially? I'm thinking like the burden on the sites must be enormous. Wouldn't it? Could this be the thing to do?
I definitely think that standardization is a key component in general within the industry. For e-consent specifically, although, as I previously mentioned, the consenting process on site varies and it can vary a lot. So we need to have quite agnostic technology to support those kind of processes. And I truly believe that with what the technology can do nowadays, that should be feasible.
But it's not. I want to go back to that. You mentioned like the verbiage is an issue. Again, for someone like me, plain language should be like table stakes. But you say it's not nearly as simple as you think it is.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. So, no, also correct. So the verbiage and the content is another sort of challenge within overall the consenting process. So we've got on one hand the technology that enables the consent information between sites and staff. But definitely one of the biggest challenges and the feedback that we constantly get from patient advocacy groups is that the consent forms are too lengthy and too complex and highly scientific. And if you think about if we continue to write lengthy documents and we quote unquote just digitize it, then e-consent will never be more and better perceived. So in order to approach this challenge in a proper way, you need to think about the technology, but definitely also about the content that we provide to our participants.
That goes back to what you were saying at the start of the conference, which, by the way, I love. This whole concept that we can use visuals, because patients, as you rightly say, patients don't have the scientific wherewithal to absorb some of the information. However, they can readily absorb patients. Have you seen that being used and used well in e-consent forms?
Yeah, definitely. And I've seen for pediatric studies, it's more often used. But I don't see why we should not use this for adults, because the expectation already is that we need to write the content at a certain grade level, which is not that high, and therefore even more challenging within our industry. I consider writing lay language at that level to be an expertise. And even though I've been doing it myself on a local level, seeing a lot of consent forms passing through on global level, this is really an expertise and something that people need to be aware of, at least.
The other thing is, and by the way, this comes up every single conversation I have with a sponsor, it's all about time. So here we are adding in a complexity of animation, right? By the way, I totally agree with you. It's a wonderful way to absorb information is through animation. But it does create a delay. It does impact our FPI days. What's the way around, or is there a way around this?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And this is, I think, probably the biggest reason for the low uptake of e-consent is that it's considered a nice to have, and it adds up to the timelines and hence puts the overall startup approval timelines at risk. And it's also adding to the budget, because in principle, a paper document doesn't cost that much, although there's hidden cost. But yes, if you want to go to animation, then you need to have things in such an order, in such a shape, that you can manage to get that approved and implemented in a timely manner. And the only, maybe there are multiple ways, but one of the ways to deal with that is to standardize things as much as possible. And so you need to increase your reusability, because that allows you to meet your timelines. If every time a clinical study is treated as a single project where all the documentation will be created from the start, then it's not strange that you have challenges with your timelines and meeting those. But if you can pick and choose from existing material that has already been pre-approved, that has been proven to be successful in other studies, why not reuse this?
Is the template part, is that not done already in ICF?
I cannot speak for all companies, obviously, but templatizing on that level is probably not done. A lot of companies will have a standard global template, but that gives insight on high-level information with additional instructions to make it more study-specific. And that's where it becomes vague. So normally the templates are simple and run maybe to 9-10 pages. But when these templates will need to become more study-specific, then they stretch to 20 pages. And this is only when we talk about the global level. I can also say that there are quite a lot of countries who have their own country-specific template, which makes it for a country a little bit more challenging as well, because what you need to do is translate your study-specific one, your global one, and modify that to your local needs.
And that's it. Well, in translation, we try and reuse as many assets as possible, but you're right. And the other thing, by the way, that I've seen is that there are so many different pairs of hands that this document passes through, and each have add their own little, I call it a bauble onto a Christmas tree. They add their own piece and becomes this behemoth. a 20-page document now suddenly, and the patient had to absorb that. That's a real challenge, I think.
No, definitely. And I think, let me start by saying that I think everyone who contributes to writing consent forms wants to do a good job and wants to inform all the participants in the best possible way. This is what the guidelines ask us to do. We need to inform them accordingly. But everyone interprets that differently and uses different words. So it is definitely a challenge to write things in one particular way to address the entire crowd. And that's what's happening with review and review rounds and having more people to it. And again, the less people you will have in developing this with the right expertise and the right level of reusability of that particular content, the more successful you will become eventually.
And that's the nirvana, but unfortunately, the reality is that we, certainly from our point of view, we are hit with an FPI date, which is often, I don't use the word unrealistic, but it's challenging. It's challenging, and then we have so many moving parts before we can actually, you know, enroll our first patient, screen the first patient. It's a challenge. So if we could standardize the ICF piece, if we could standardize that and shrink, that would be wonderful. But I'm very conscious of what you said around the cost, because there is a perception, and we get the same, by the way, in ECOA, that paper is cheap, blah, 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 but there is hidden costs, you rightly say. The same with e-consent. Paper is free, almost. E-consent is expensive. And then when you add in animation stuff, by the way, I think animation in pediatrics and rare diseases should be our on-ramp for this. It should be. That should be preferred. Yeah. But if we want to do it, if we want to, that should be our proof of concept, because there is a bigger appetite, I think, for a bigger spend in rare disease, where we could do it. As you rightly say, it's just this challenge of time.
Well, I totally agree. And as you phrase it, it's nirvana what we're looking for. And in my ideal world, it's every patient should have access to the consent form in the way that they want to read the information. It could be still paper, because there are still people who love to read the paper documents, but we should be able to accommodate that. But if there are people and patients out there who are more visual or just want to listen to the content, then we should be facilitating that as well. And I realize that it's going to be an enormous step to get to there, but we need to start somewhere. So companies and we people and in the industry just need to make that decision and support the belief that this is the best thing that we should be doing. And then start looking at, okay, where do we start? And just start small, start testing it, start learning, and you will gradually become quicker and also eventually more cost efficient. So there are also a lot of cost benefits when introducing your consent. Follow up, you've got your consent information, the status, all that kind of information captured electronically. And with paper, sometimes things go a bit into a black box, which is obviously in a clinical trial environment not ideal.
When it comes to the patients, though, and the follow-up, is there anything that we can do around that with ICS, or is that a done deal? That's the next phase.
So that's the potential. I think it's a good point, actually, because people think about consent as a one-off exercise, but I think the average amount of protocol updates that have been made during the study is like around 3 or 5 different protocol versions. But they all lead to updates of the consent form, meaning that patients need to be reconsented throughout the study multiple times, which is a nightmare to maintain. And also people struggle around, okay, how and what do we need to provide to the patient? Is it the full length of the consent form again? I've seen that happen. Or is it just a summary of the changes? Or is it just a summary of the new information? So even there are so many different opinions. And I'm not saying that one is wrong or one is right, but if people have the patient in mind, then we would get probably much better in delivering this type of information to the patient in the best way.
That's, Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. The whole concept of reconsent, I think, lends itself perfectly to electronic format, more so than paper. And again, I'm always thinking about what's the on-ramp. I know I use that phrase all the time, but it really is, what's the, what follows the path of least resistance? What's the easiest way to get e-consent adopted? But it's going to, for me, it's going to be the reconsent. It's going to be pediatrics, rare disease, because that is where the biggest value. We get that on board, and I think there is, by osmosis, there is going to be a better buy-in for general RCTs.
Yeah. And I hope that sites will see the benefit of that as well, purely because if you are able to share the latest update of the consent that requires to be signed instantly through your platform or through email or whatever type of solution you're using, then you're also meeting your regulation timelines that state that you need to inform patients in a timely manner. And there are still too many audit findings or monitoring findings that confirm that patients, that they forgot to sign the consent form during their last visit. They need to reconsent during the next visit. But if that visit takes place 3 months later, then you'll have a gap of 6 months. And through enabling this through technology, you could avoid quite a lot of quality issues here.
That is exactly it. So I think that's the message that we should take away from this, that consenting is a living document. There's iterations of it. And by virtue of that, to do it electronically is better data first and foremost, but it's also, it just makes more sense for the patient. I'm loving what we're hearing. Conscious of time, I'm gonna end this and ask you one thing. I ask all my guests. If you had a magic wand, you have one wish for clinical trials, what would it be? Vis-a-vis e-consent, obviously. What would it be, you think?
I think, as said, the consenting process, it's a process, and it's huge and it's complex. So I don't think one wish is good to solve everything here. But so I could have wished for everyone using e-consent. But as said, I want patients to be reading this information in the way they feel most comfortable. So digital is not only the way to go forward. If I would make the change, I would say, let's start at the beginning. If you want to make a change, you need to start somewhere, and you need to start at the beginning. And the beginning where I see we need to start is the document itself. If we can create a standard across the industry and agree upon, this is the minimum, but the maximum amount of information that we need to provide our patients to inform them about the study, that signing of that document is sufficient for patients to be comfortable to participate, and the industry is comfortable that we have the boundaries to do what we can do according to the protocol, I think that we've made a major step forward to get to eventually bringing in all the technology.
I hope you're right. I hope we get there. Thanks for coming out. I really appreciate it. Today, we're talking to Edmund Cullen. He's principal of consultant at See and Flow, from vision to execution. I love that strap line, by the way, Edmund. If you want to come on our podcast, send us an email. LifeSci Talks, all word, LifeSci Talks at transperfect.com. See you next time. Edmund, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mark.